We're holding on Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, the top line. The Mishnah had given a list of people who donated things to the Beis Mikdash, which the Chachamim praised them for. The first one we said, which had directly to do with our Mishnayos over here, we said the Kohen Gadol was going to make a lottery on the two goats, La Shem and La Azazel. So originally the lots were made out of wood, and then a Kohen Gadol named Ben Gamla instead made them out of gold. So the Chachamim praised him for that. And then the Mishnah digressed to mention various other people who donated things to the Beis Mikdash, which the Chachamim praised them for. So the last one the Mishnah had said was Nikaner Nasim Nisim Ladal Soysev. Nikaner Nisim happened to his gates, to his doors, and the Chachamim, he was also one of the ones that the Chachamim mentioned for praise. So Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Man Nisim Nasu Ladal Soysev, what Nisim were done with Nikaner's doors. This Nikaner was a Yid. Nikaner itself is a Greek name, but in those times, of course, we know many Jews had Greek names. So this guy was a Yid, So Amru, so they said, Kishaholach Nicanor Lahavi Glossus in Alexandria Shamitraim. When Nicanor went to bring doors for the Beis Mikdash from Alexandria in Egypt. In those days, Alexandria was the world capital of science and technology. So if you wanted something beautiful made, among other things, then you would go to Alexandria. So he went there to get these beautiful copper doors for the Beis Mikdash. And on the way back, a storm blew up in the sea and was threatening to sink him. Now, as we're going to see in the story, it was a test. What's he going to do as far as his doors? Tosfos Yeshanim does mention an interesting point. You might think that happened to punish him because what's he doing in Alexandria? The Torah says a Yid is never allowed to return to Mitzrayim. But the answer is no, says Tosfos Yeshanim, because you're not allowed to go to live there, but you're allowed to go there to do business. He didn't live in Alexandria. He just went there in order to commission these copper doors, and then he's coming back with them. So he didn't do anything wrong in that regard. So now there's a storm, and in a storm, you always want to lighten the boat. Because the boat, when it's carrying a heavy load, it rides very low in the water, and there's more of a danger that it may break up and sink. So Notlu Achas Mehen, the sailors took one of the doors, the Tiluha Layam, and threw it into the sea. Ba'adain Lainochayam Mizapoy, but still the sea hadn't calmed down and it was still storming and raging, and then they were worried that the ship might sink. Bikrula Hatalas Chabata, so they were going to throw the other door in as well. Omadhu Uk Vikarcha, so he, Nicanor, stood and wrapped his arms around the door. Omalahem, he tells them, Hatiluni Ima. If you're going to throw it in, throw me together with it. Now, why didn't he do that? The first one, actually, one of the Mephoshim says, because the first one, he figured, okay, at least I have the second one. They can make a copy of it in Eretz Yisrael. But if the second one's going to be gone, then he has nothing to even make a copy of. So he was going to protect it at the cost of his life. Mind you, actually, I mean, you have a question: How is he allowed to do that? You're not allowed to commit suicide for any except for the big three: Avodah Zarah, Gilah Arayis, and Shfichas Damim. So one answer is that if they threw him overboard, it wouldn't be that he himself is throwing himself overboard. It would be that they did it, so he wouldn't be responsible. But another explanation is he doesn't actually mean they're going to throw him overboard, but he figured that if he does that, then they're not going to throw it overboard because they're not going to want to throw him as well. Anyway, so noch miyad noch hayam mizapoy. Right away, the storm calmed down from its raging. So now they're out of danger. So still, Nicanor was glad he still had the one door, but he still felt bad that he was missing the other door. Then when they came to the port of Akkoi on the coast of Eretz Yisrael, all of a sudden they saw that the other door that had been thrown in was sticking out from under the bottom of the ship. So in other words, it had a nest had happened, and instead of it sinking to the bottom as you would expect, instead it actually traveled along with the ship the whole way, and now they were able to fish it out of the water. The Yesh Omrim, others say what happened was the way the door was saved, Briya Shabayam Balata, a sea creature, a whale or something, swallowed the door, the Heki Ata, the Yabasha, and then when they came to Eretz Yisrael, it spit it out onto the dry land. So either way, the other door was saved. That was the nest that happened, that the one door that was thrown into the ocean was saved, and the other one, the storm calmed down. There is actually an interesting explanation from Rav Lev Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, where he talks about Alpi Kabbalah, that these two doors represent, he talks about Alpi Kabbalah, how these two doors represent Yaakov and Yosef, respectively. The one that was thrown into the sea represents Yosef. The one that came along with them the whole time represents Yaakov. And he explains later on, you have various words and various phrases in this story over here that represent that are gematria or that otherwise represent Yosef and Yaakov respectively. So Va'aleha Omar Shloima, about this nest, Shloima said in Shir HaShirim with Ruach HaKodesh, Kodesh Batenu Arrozim, the beams of our houses, meaning our main house, the Beis Mikdash, are of cedar, Rohitenu Broisim, and Rohitenu are Broisim. Now the simple meaning of Rohitenu means like our gutters or something like that. Rashi explains though that the word Rohitenu means doors, because the word Rohat is Aramaic for run, and a door opens and closes, so like it runs back and forth. Broisim, the simple meaning of broisim, is a kind of wood that they're made out of, cypress or some wood like that. But al tikri broisim ela bris yam. Don't read broisim, but rather bris yam, so as if these two doors had made a bris, or had made a covenant one with the other, that one is going to go wherever the other one does, and therefore that if one of them is going to be thrown overboard, it's going to come along with the other. Or Rashi says a second explanation, the word is not bris yam, but brias yam, a creature of the sea, which is the second version that we said that a sea creature swallowed the door and then spit it back out. So that was the nest that happened with these doors. Lefichach, now therefore, because this nest happened, all the gates, all the doors in the Beis Mikdash eventually were changed over to gold. Like this, when they came to build the second Beis Mikdash, and apparently this Nicanor lived early in the time of the second Beis Mikdash, the Jews were poor, they couldn't afford gold gates for the Beis Mikdash. But eventually they became richer and they were able to afford gold gates. So they were able to afford to make the gates out of gold, and therefore all the other gates were swapped out for golden ones, except Chutz Mishar and Nicanor, except for the gates of Nicanor, Mipnesha Nasa by Nissim, because Nissim happened with it. So therefore, they left those copper the whole time. The Yesh Omrim, some say there's a different reason why they didn't change them over to gold, because the copper that those doors were made out of was golden, so it shone like gold. The expression in the Mishnah actually is slightly different. The expression is the Mishnah in Midas uses the expression matziv. That's one of the ones that Reb Levick points out. The word matziv is gematria 147, which is the number of years that Yaakov lived. And he goes on to explain, in fact, how the word breaks down to represent the years that Yaakov lived where he had troubles, and then the 17 years that he lived in Mitzrayim, and he explains it in some detail. Anyway. So the copper of them shone brightly like gold. Therefore, according to that second explanation, they didn't need to swap them out for gold ones. Rabbi Lezman Yaakov says it was very pure copper. Klonissa, Rashi says, means purified. So it shone as brightly as gold, and therefore that goes together with the second reason, that because of that they didn't need to exchange them for gold doors, because they already shone as brightly as gold. But still, they would have swapped them out for gold were it not for the fact that Nissim happened with them, and therefore they kept them so that people should always remember the Ness. The Mishnah says, now that we mentioned in the previous Mishnah several people that the Chachamim praised for their contribution to the Beis Mikdash, now the Mishnah goes on to mention other people that the Chachamim criticized for things that they did relating to the Beis Mikdash or relating to other skills or talents that they have, which they didn't want to share. So the Mishnah says, the Elu Lignai, the following people we mention in a derogatory sense, shall base down, and many of these, by the way, this list of people and details about them we learned in Masechta Shkalim about a month or two ago as well, in the Yerushalmi. So the Yerushalmi had it over there. The Bavli has it here in Yoma. So Shabbos Garmu LeRotzu LeLamed Al Ma'aseh Lechem. In Shkalim, actually, we had the list of the 15 officials in the Beis Mikdash, and among them were some of the people mentioned in our Mishnah. So then the Gemara mentioned over there the criticisms that the Chachamim had of them, like it says over here. So Shabbos Garmu LeRotzu LeLamed Al Ma'aseh Lechem upon him. The people of Beis Garmu did not, their job was to bake the lechem upon him. They did not want to teach other people how the lechem upon him is made. As we're going to say in the Gemara, there was a complicated detail involved that they didn't want to inform, that they didn't want to tell anybody else. Shabbos Avtinus LeRotzu LeLamed Al Ma'aseh HaKtoras. The family of Avtinus, they were in charge of making the Ktoras. We learned in the first parak of Al Masechta how they had a chamber in the Beis Mikdash where they would take the Kohen Gadol during the few days before Yom Kippur to teach him how to take the handful of Ktoras that he needs to on Yom Kippur. So this base Avtinus, the Chachamim criticized them. LeRotzu LeLamed Al Ma'aseh HaKtoras. They did not want to teach anybody about the secret that they knew how to make the Ktoras. The third one, Hugras ben Levi, that was his name, Hugras, either ben Levi, either means his father's name was Levi, or it means that he was a Levi who sang in the Beis Mikdash. Hoya Yedea Perek Bashir, he knew a particular detail of singing. Rashi says Perek is Hachras Kol Ne'ima, the way to make his voice, the way to use his voice and make it sound very beautiful, as we're going to say in the Gemara. And he didn't want to teach anybody else how to do that. And Ben Kamtzer, LeRotzel Lamed, on my Sav, Ben Kamtzer didn't want to teach anybody else the kind of writing that he invented. Rashi describes that he would put four pens between his fingers. It would put four pens, one tied to each finger, and this way he could write the name of Hashem all at once. So he didn't want to teach anybody else how to do that. Now, what was the advantage of that? First of all, one advantage is you're not supposed to talk while you're not supposed to talk while you're writing Hashem's name. So this way, when you're writing it regular, one letter after another, then you have the problem. You might end up talking in the middle, and you're not supposed to. So like this, writing it all at once is a big mila. This way, it's written all at once, and he didn't want to teach anybody about that. And the Chachamim criticized him for that. A different explanation is also that, like this, it would be covered for Hashem's name that the name is not left incomplete for a while. Like this, you write Yud and then a Hey and then Vav, etc. So it takes time until the name is complete. So like this, he wrote all four letters at one time so that the name is complete all at one time. And the Minchas Chinuch actually says a different vort on it. He says, when you think about it, when you write Hashem's name, you write the letters Yud K. That already forms a name of Hashem. Now, when you write the Vav, isn't that now you're, so to speak, erasing Hashem's name? You're turning it from Yud K, which is a name of Hashem, to Yud K Vav, which is not yet a name of Hashem. So it's almost like you're erasing it. Oh, but that's how it is. That's how you have to write the letters, and you have to write them to Sidron. So you have no choice, and that's how you do it. And eventually you write the Hey. The last Hey. But so like this, Ben Kamtzer's invention made that's not necessary. Now you don't need to turn it from a name of Hashem into not a name. And therefore it was a good thing. And again, he didn't want to teach anybody. There is an interesting idea, actually. The Maratz Chayas wants to say that what he invented was a kind of printing. And he says that's why the Chachamim criticized him, not just because they could use this to write the name of Hashem, because they could have used this to print Svarim. The whole world would look different if they had invented printing all that long time ago in the time of the Mishnah rather than it took until 500 years ago to be invented. Based on that, actually, based on the idea that it may have been printing, or at least that even if we say that it was writing, but we're saying we're writing all the letters at once. Now, it's interesting, in Tefillin and Mezuzahs, the halacha is the letters have to be written in order. You can't write them out of order or it's possible. Here we're saying on the face of it that he wrote all four letters at the same time. So isn't there the possibility that maybe one is written before the other? So there's an interesting thing. There's a tshuva from one of the early achronim. A sefer of Shalos Tshuva is called Masas Binyamin, where he wants to say, based on this, that in the same way, printing, you're printing all the letters on the page at the same time. So he wants to argue that printing should be considered writing lahalacha, which means that printed Sfarim should have the kedusha of handwritten ones. It would mean, according to him, good morning, Ellie. It would mean, according to him, you'd be allowed to print. to print Sifrei Torah or Tefillin or Mezuzos rather than writing them. The halacha is not like that, of course, but he says based on this Gemara, maybe that should be a possibility. An interesting point, by the way, also is you have to ask how he's able to write the name of Hashem all in one stroke, all like that with four pens. I mean, two of the letters are Hayes. They have a separate leg over there. How are you writing that? How is he breaking in between? So Ben Yehoyada says a whole complicated thing of how he could have arranged the pens in such a way to be able to do that. But there is the Yad Yosef on Ein Yaakov says a cute word. He says maybe when Ben Kamtzer was going to write a name of Hashem, maybe he put down strips of paper in the place where the space is supposed to be between the body of the hay, the dalad shape, and the leg. So that way he's writing over it. So that way when he's writing something like a ches. But then you remove the piece of paper and you have the space over there. Whatever the case, the point is this Ben Kamtzer knew this method of writing, and he didn't want to teach anybody else, and the Chachamim criticized him for that. So the Gemara says, Al Rishonim Nemar Zecher Tzadik Livracha. About the earlier ones, it says the memory of the Tzadik is for a bracha. Val Elu Nemar, and about the other ones, it says the continuation of the same pasuk. Rishem Rishoyim Yukav. The name of the Rishoyim should rot. Now, who are the Rishonim and the Baal Elu? So on the face of it, the Rishonim are the ones from the previous Mishnah, Ben Gamla and Ben Kotin and Hilni and Munbaz and Nicanor, who all donated things to the Bais Mikdash. And then the Baal Elu would be the ones of our Mishnah that we said that the Chachamim mentioned Lignai. We're going to see in the Gemara though that the first two, Beis Garmu and Beis Aptinas, had reasons for what they said. So therefore, maybe in the end, the Chachamim didn't criticize them. And even Hugras also, it says that he also had a similar reason, as we'll see in the Gemara. So maybe the Val Elu only refers to the last two, or maybe it refers only to Ben Kamtzer and people like him. Okay. So the Gemara starts off, again, we learned this almost word for word in Shkolim as well. Beis Garmu hoi b'kiin b'maisa lachem aponim. The people of the family of Garmu were experts in how to make the lachem aponim. V'loi rotzu l'lamed. They didn't want to teach anybody else how to do it. So the Chachamim fired them. Shochu Chachamim, and the Chachamim sent. V'heviu umnin me'Alexandria shom Mitzrayim. They brought experts from Alexandria in Egypt. Again, like we said, Alexandria was the world capital of science and technology in those times. So if they were going to find people who know how to do expert, complicated things, they're going to find them in Alexandria. The Pashtus, these workers are Jews, because you have to lock them upon him. The Pashtus has to be baked by Jews. Anyway, Bahayu Yodin Lefus Kamoisan, these people knew how to bake the lachem aponim like Beis Garmu, the Loihayu Yodin Ludus Kamoisan, but they didn't know how to take it out of the oven like the way Beis Garmu did. Now remember, the lachem aponim had a very complicated shape. So therefore, they didn't, and the way you made bread in those times is you stuck the dough to the inside wall of the oven. So these guys didn't know how to take it off without breaking it. So shahalolo masikin mebachutz v'oifin mebachutz. So the result was, the people from Alexandria would have to fire up the oven from the outside v'oifin mebachutz, and they would have to bake the bread on the outside of the oven. They didn't know how to be able to take it out of the oven without breaking it. So they had to fire up the, they had to put the fire on the outside of the oven and then put the bread on the outside of the oven so that it would be easier to get off afterwards without breaking it. Whereas Beis Garmu had the expertise to know how to be able to make the fire inside the oven where it's supposed to be, and to be able to bake the bread on the inside of the oven where it's supposed to be, and then to be able to take it out without breaking it. In Shkolim, we had this Gemara as well, and we had it with a bit of a different. In the Yerushalmi over there had a different girsa over there that they would put the fire on the inside of the oven, and they would bake on the outside, or the other way around. Whatever the case, they didn't know how to do it the exact way. So the result was halolo pitan misapeshes. So the result was the bread that the people from Alexandria baked ended up becoming moldy. Bahalolu ain't pitan misapeshes, whereas the one that Beis Garmu made did not become moldy. Now, why would it become moldy? Well, one thing is because you have to, when it's baked all the way through, Ben Yehoyada says, practically speaking, when it's baked all the way through, it's not going to become moldy so easily in the week that it's sitting on the shulchan. But like this, since they couldn't bake it all the way through, since they're having to bake it on the outside of the oven, because otherwise it's going to break, then therefore it wasn't thoroughly baked, and therefore it ended up getting moldy. Tosfos Yeshanim points out that wasn't there supposed to be a nest that the bread stayed hot and fresh on the shulchan the whole week. But the point is that the point is, though, in general, Hashem only makes a nest where people can't do anymore. Over here, they had the alternative. They could have Beis Gamu do it. And since they didn't, then Hashem didn't prevent the bread from getting moldy. Other Mepharshim say, rather, that maybe those Nisim happened primarily more in the first Beis Mikdash, maybe not necessarily in the second Beis Mikdash. Whatever the case, so now there's a problem. We can't make the Lacham upon him properly. Kshamu Chachamim B'davar, when the Chachamim heard what's going on, Omru, they said, we have to remember, Kol Masha Bara HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Chvodei Broi, everything that Hashem created in the world, he created for his kavod. Anything that's created for everything that's called by my name, I created it for my kavod. So therefore, it's not for kavod, for Hashem, that there should be moldy bread on his shulchan. And also, Marsha adds, also that posik, the kol anikru b'shmi l'chvodi, refers to people that Hashem created for his kavod. Hashem created these people of Beis Gamu with a special talent to know how to be able to make the lachal upon him. Therefore, it means Hashem obviously created them for that purpose, and therefore we shouldn't have fired them. So, v'chazru Beis Gamu l'mokayman. So Beis Gamu was going to return to their place. So the Chachamim sent to them that we want you back, but they didn't want to come. So then the Chachamim doubled their salary, which like this, they were getting paid out of the Trumas Alishka, out of the Machta Shekel collection. So they doubled. The Chachamim offered them twice their salary, uvo, and then they came back. So how much more were they getting? Beforehand, every day they were getting 12 mana. Now that doesn't necessarily mean that every day of the year they're being paid 12 mana. I mean, in general, in Shas, we usually say a person, a poor person can live on 2 mana, 200 zuz throughout the year. So to pay these people 12 mana per day, you're talking thousands of mana per year. That's not necessarily realistic. So b'chol yom might mean up until now, where whenever they received their salary, it was always 12 mana per year. V'ayom esrim v'abba. Now they're starting to receive 24. Rabbi Yehuda omer b'chol yom esrim v'abba v'ayom aboyim v'shmona. Rabbi Yehuda says no. Originally they were getting 24. Now they're getting 48. Whatever the case, so it was doubled. So the Chachamim said to them, what are you seeing? What makes you not want to teach anybody else? Amru lahem, so Beis Gamu told them, Yodin hoyu shabais abba shabais ze'osim l'chorev. The members of our father's family, our ancestors, knew that one day this house, the second Beis Mikdash, is going to be destroyed. Shema yomud adam she'enim mehugan. So a person who's not erlach, a person who's not decent, might learn the secret of how to make malachim upon him. V'yelach v'yavad avad eskachav v'kach, and he's going to use it to serve Avodah Zarah. Because they make bread, after all. They make bread for Avodah Zarah, and they would surely want to know the secret of how you make beautiful, complicated bread like that, and take it out, and it doesn't spoil. So therefore, we didn't want to tell the secret. Now, whether the Chachamim accepted that excuse of theirs or not, different Mepharshim say, most Mepharshim say it means the Chachamim did not accept that. Very nice, you're saying, because the Beis Mikdash is going to be destroyed. Still, if you really were doing it L'shem Shemayim, then you wouldn't have demanded double your salary. You would have just come back with that. You would have said, okay, we made our point, and now we'll come back at the same salary. The fact that now they're demanding more money from the Trumas Alishka, which means now there's less money available for the other needs of the Beis Mikdash. So therefore, the Chacham didn't accept that excuse of theirs, which is why our Mishnah says that they were L'gnai, that we remember them, in a derogatory way. However, the Gemara says, "Va'al davazem askirin oisim l'shevach." With that said, by the way, Ben Yehoyada says that maybe what it is they wanted to make that this matter that they had kept the secret and that they don't want that it should fall into unworthy hands, they wanted that itself to be publicized, and they figured the way that it would be most publicized is if they demand double their salary, where now everybody knows about that. So he says that maybe after all you could find an excuse for what they did with that also. Anyway, the Gemara says, "Val dava zema skirin oisim l'shevach." Now, on the other hand, for the following matter, they did remember them favorably. Me'olam le'nimtzis pas nekiya b'yad b'nehem. No white bread was ever found in the hand of their children, meaning they only ate brown bread or pumpernickel bread or whatever. Shelo yomer u'maisa lechem aponim zen nizonin, because they didn't want that people should think that they're feeding themselves from the lechem aponim. They have all the flour for the lechem aponim, which is, of course, clean white flour. They didn't want that people should think that they're taking some of the flour and using it for their own bread. L'kayim mashanema v'yisim nekiyim mashamam Yisrael, and in this way, they were fulfilling what it says in the pasuk, you should be clean in front of Hashem and in front of the Jewish people, which, as we learned in Masechta Shkalim, means that a person needs to act in a way that's above suspicion, not only to Hashem, but also to other people. Okay. Next, the Gemara continues, Shall Beis Avtinus Leirotza Lelamed Amaisak Tertus. We said in the Mishnah that Beis Avtinus did not want to teach people about how to make a Tertus. So Tanan Abanan, we learn in a Braisa, the details of the story. Beis Avtinus Hayu Bekin Amaisak Tertus. Beis Avtinus were experts in making the Tertus. V'loi Rotza Lelamed. They did not want to teach other people how what the secret. Again, Shocho Chacham Beviu Umnin from Alexandria from Mitzrayim. The Chachamim went and brought expert perfumers from Alexandria in Egypt. Now they knew how to compound the Ktertus just as well as Beis Avtinus. But they did not know how to make smoke rise the way that Beis Avtinus did. So the Shel Halola Mitama of Ola Kamakel, the Ktertus that the Beis Avtinus made had in it the secret ingredient, Mala Oshan, so the smoke would go straight up like a pillar. Shel Halola, the Ktertus that the other people from Alexandria made, Mafsia Lakan Lakan, the smoke would be dispersing in all directions. Now, an interesting point in that actually is, don't we say in, we say in every morning in Pitur Makhtertus, v'im chisar echad mikol yata mala oshan kol shu, and im chisar echad mikol samoneh chayav misa. So how, so that means, in other words, so these people from Alexandria, they didn't have mala oshan in their Makhtertus. How is the Makhtertus kosher b'chlal? We're going to say in the Gemara, the Chacham said it's not, the Chacham are going to say it's more covered for Hashem this way, but how are they not saying it's possible in the first place? So, Tosfos Yeshanim says over here that Tosfos Yeshanim says, okay, because at least at least it's going basically up. So it's not going exactly up. It's going a little bit off to the sides, but therefore that's not so bad. At least they're yotze in a basic way. They knew some kind of mala oshan, they just didn't know the mala oshan. On the other hand, the Beis Yosef says, you see from this, that if you don't put Mala Oshin, it's not one of the things that Im Chisarechem we call Samaneh Chayiv Misa. That applies only to the ones that are in there for the smell. So therefore, Mala Oshin is not in there for the smell, and therefore we see from our Gemara, apparently, that the Tertus is kosher without it. Although different Achronim then talk about that and argue about that, Hayitochen, we say later on, clearly in the Masechta, that if the Kohen Gadol goes on Yom Kippur in with Tertus that doesn't have Mala Oshin, then he's Chayiv Misa. So in fact, the Mishnah Lamalach on the Rambam says, maybe there's a difference. Maybe the Beis Yosef would hold there's a difference between the Tertus of Yom Kippur and the rest of the year. Yom Kippur, you have to have Mala Oshin in. The rest of the year, you're supposed to have Mala Oshin, but if you don't, then the Beis Yosef would say it's not Ma'akir. Anyway, when the Chachamim heard what's going on, Omru, they said, everything that Hashem made in the world, he made for his honor. As the Pasuk says, Hashem made everything for his sake. So that means, in other words, again, if we have to have Beis Avtinus back, they're the ones who know the secret. Now, why are they using a different Pasuk than they use for Beis Garmu? So Tosfos Yeshanim says, because the first one, it's a lack of cover, that there should be moldy bread on the Shulchan is a lack of cover for Hashem. Here, that the smoke is not going straight up, that it's mostly going up, but it's sort of dispersing to the sides. Okay, it's not so much a lack of cover, but still it shows Hashem created that this Mala Oshan plant that should accomplish that it should go straight up. That would be a Hidur Mitzvah, and therefore we need that Hidur Mitzvah back. Marshall says a different point. Beis Garmu, what they had was an actual talent that they knew how to take out the bread without it breaking apart. On the other hand, with Beis Avtinus, it's not so much that they had a talent, it's that they knew the identity of Mala Oshan, which nobody else did. In principle, that kind of thing, they could have easily told somebody else. So therefore, the Mila is not in them, the Mila is more in the plant. And therefore, instead of using the Pasuk Kol HaNikra B'Shmi V'Lechvodi, which refers primarily to human beings, we're instead bringing Kol Paul Hashem L'Maneu, which is talking about other things in the world. Anyway, v'chazru Beis Avtinus l'mekayman, so Beis Avtinus is going to have to return to where they were. Again, sholcholam chachamim v'leibo, the chachamim sent word for them that they want them back, but they didn't want to come. Kofel lehen scharim uvo, they doubled their salary and then they came back. V'choyim ha'yunotim l'shnei masa mona, they used to get 12 mona as their salary, v'hayim esrim v'abba, and now they're getting 24. Rabbi Yehuda amr v'choyim esrim v'abba, v'hayim aboyim v'shmoyna. Rabbi Yehuda says they used to get 24, now they get 48. Again, like with Beis Garmu, the Chachamim say to them, why didn't you want to teach it? Amru, they said, Yodin Hoyo Shabbos Abba, Shabbaisa Osa Bechorev, our father, our ancestors knew that the Bais Mikdash is one day going to be destroyed. Amru, so they said, Shema Yomud Adam Shayna Mahogan, a no good person might learn the secret, the Yelech V'yavad Avedis Kachav Mekach, and he's going to use it. After all, they burned Ktodas in front of Avedis Zarah as well, and maybe they might use that secret for Avedis Zarah. Okay, again, most of the Mephoshim say that the Chachamim did not accept that excuse of theirs. But they did mention favorably the following thing that Beis Avtinas did. No kala ever went out of their house wearing perfume. And not only that, if they married a woman from a different place who might not be familiar with their family minhag, they would make a tnai with her that she should not wear perfume. So that people shouldn't suspect them that they're taking some of the spices of the Ktodas and using it for perfume. Now, by the way, why? So in Yerushalayim itself, we're going to learn tomorrow, Bez Hashem, on Lama Tesim and Beis, that in Yerushalayim itself, nobody needed perfume because the aroma of the Ktodas, the smell of the Ktodas permeated the whole city, and you didn't even need perfume. But we're talking about if they were going to be living or visiting someplace else, even then they're not supposed to wear perfume. And also, why is it by the white bread? We didn't mention that. Well, the difference is if the husband of the family is not going to be eating white bread, then his wife is not going to demand white bread. She's going to eat whatever her husband eats. But obviously, women wear perfume. Men don't. So therefore, they need to make a special tanai with the women over here. So again, l'kayim mashanem, v'yisim nekiyim, mashem v'yisrael. Again, they were fulfilling what it says in the pasuk that you should be clean in the eyes of Hashem and of the Jewish people, that you should act in a way that's above suspicion. Okay, Tanya, we learned in a braisa. Amar Rabbi Shmuel says, after the Churban, Pam achas harisim ahalach baderach, one time I was walking on the road, umotsasi echad mibnei b'nehem, I found one of their descendants, one of the descendants of Beis Gamu or Beis Avtinas, a mauti loy, I said to him, avisecha bikshu laharis kvodon, your ancestors wanted to increase their kavod, because we said they wanted a higher salary, they wanted to reduce Hashem's kavod by demanding more money from the Truma Salishka. But now kvod mokum b'mekomei, Hashem's kavod is exactly where it was before, because maloi kalaretz kvodei, which was true just as much before as it is now. Umiyat kvodem, and instead their kavod, your family's kavod, was reduced because now there's no more Beis Mikdash and there's no more lechem aponim and there's no more ketores. When we had this in the Yerushalmi, the Girsa was a little bit different. That he said that the kavod of Hashem was increased. Now, how is the kavod of Hashem increased by the Churban? So one explanation we said over there is because it showed that Hashem does not show favoritism. People might have thought in those days that Hashem is never going to allow the Beis Mikdash to be destroyed because it's his house after all, and therefore the Jewish people are not going to go into Golos. And like this, Hashem showed that no, he's going to do exactly what he said he's going to do, and he's not playing favorites. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Akiva. Pam achas sochli Rabbi Shmuel ben Luga. Rabbi Shmuel ben Luga one time told me the following story. In the Yerushalmi in Shkolim, he was named Shimon ben Luga. Anyway, pam achas yotzosi ani ve'echad mibnei b'nehem l'soda l'lakat asovim. One time, I and one of the descendants of Beis Avtinas were going out into the field to gather grasses or herbs. I saw that this guy with me was laughing and crying, or really actually the Gemara is supposed to be the other way around, that he cried and then he laughed. So I asked him, why you're crying? He says, this boy is descended from Avtinas. I remember the cupboard of my ancestors, how they used to make the tortoise in the Beis Mikdash. So Rabbi Shmuel ben Luga asked him, so now why were you laughing? Because I remember also that Hashem in the future is going to restore that glory and that dignity to us when the Beis Mikdash is rebuilt. So he asked him, so what brought this to mind all of a sudden, and in the middle here while we're gathering herbs, all of a sudden you remembered about this? Amali, he says to me, Mala Oshan Kinegri, in front of me is a Mala Oshan plant. Among the various grasses and herbs that are growing over here is the Mala Oshan plant. So Rabbi Shmuel ben Luga says, Hareuli, show it to me. It's after the Churban anyway. Omali, the guy tells him, The guy tells him, "Shvua hi biyadenu shein marin oisa v'cholodim." We have an oath. We have a promise among our family that we don't just show it to anybody for the reason that we said before, because we don't want people to go and we don't want it to fall into the wrong hands and it'll end up being used for avodah zarah. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yechim Nanuri, Pam achas matzasi zokin echad. One time I met up with an old man. Umegila samanin biyadoi. He had with him a scroll that described the ingredients of the Torah. And it was more than just they described it. I mean, the description we have every day in davening. But this was the Rashash says it also had pictures. Whatever, it also had the details of how to make the Torah. So I asked him, where you're from? He says, I'm descended from Beis Aptinas. Rabbi Yechim and Nuri asked him, what are you holding? I'm holding a scroll that describes the ingredients of the Torah. So Rabbi Yechim and Nuri says, Rabbi, show it to me. So the old man says, listen, as long as my father's family were in existence, as long as the family was around, they would not just give it over to anybody because, like we said, they didn't want the secret to fall into the wrong hands. But now that the whole family is gone and I don't want the secret to die with me, then I'm giving it to you. A different girsa, which also we have this also in Shkolim, is not that the family no longer exists, but rather the family are no longer snuyim. They used to be discreet and careful that they wouldn't give away the secret to anybody else. Now the old man is saying they're not so discreet anyway, so therefore I don't want to give it to them because it may fall into the wrong hands. So fine, I'm giving it to you, Rabbi Yechim and Nuri, v'hizahba, but be careful with it that the secret doesn't get out. And he says, when I, Rabbi Yechim and Nuri, came and told over to Rabbi Akiva what happened, he said, from now on, we're not allowed to talk about these people of Beis Aptinas in a derogatory way. Now, all these years later, we see that they were right when they said that they're not telling the secret because they don't want that the secret should fall into the wrong hands and be used for avodah zarah. Now, all these years later, we see they're right because now we see that this old man Taka went and gave the secret to you in order that it should stay in the right place. So the Gemara continues, based on this whole story that we said, that Beis Gamu and Beis Aftinas were fired, but later on they had to rehire them because they're the only ones who knew the secret. Ben Azai said, Bishimcha Yikru'ucha, they will call you by your name, meaning Rashi says a person should never be concerned if so-and-so is taking over my parnasa. He's opening a competing business and I'm going to lose my parnasa. Don't worry about that. You will be called by name to return to your place and to have your parnasa. You will be placed back in the place where you belong. You will be given what really belongs to you. In other words, not that you're going to be receiving something at their expense. Everything, everyone's mizonis, everyone's parnasa is set up min hashamayim. You're going to end up getting your parnasa, as we see over here with Beis Gamu and Beis Aptinas. Nobody can touch something that's set aside min hashamayim for somebody else. One kingdom does not overlap the other one, even a hair's breadth, meaning when it's time for one kingdom, for one government to fall, then it falls exactly at the right time without a hair's breadth difference. Rashi says, for example, some kingdoms are destined to fall by night. For example, Bavel, where they were destroyed and conquered at night. And sure enough, Hashem decided they're going to be destroyed by night, and that's exactly what happened. On the other hand, for example, Mitzrayim was destined to be destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar by day. The Pesukim mentioned that. And sure enough, it actually fell and was conquered by day. So it always happens at exactly the time. Marsha says the whole phrase over here that Ben Azai is saying, each phrase of it is referring to something in the story of Beis Gamu and Beis Aptinas. V'shimcha yikrucha, they call you by name, as in they call them back, as in we said in the Mishnah that now it's not Shem Rishoyim Yerkov. We don't consider them anymore Rishoyim, whose name is going to rot, that we don't use it, because now we realize, after all, that they were right in what they did, so therefore we call them by their name again. You're going to be placed back in your place, which they did. They were placed back in their position in the Beis Hamikdash. And the extra salary that they gave was destined for them min hashamayim. So his expression represents in brief this whole story of Beis Gamu and Beis Aptinas. Okay. The Mishnah continued. Hugras ben Levi b'chola. We said that Hugras ben Levi knew a special method of singing, and he didn't want to tell it. So Tanya, k'shu noisin kolib in ima, when he would sing beautifully, when he would give forth his voice in singing, machnes gudloy l'seich piv, he had a special way. He would stick his thumb into his mouth. Umaniach etz boy bein animin, he would put his finger between the hairs. Rashi says between the hairs of his mustache. So and he had a special way of therefore, with that, of modulating his voice, and it sounded so beautiful, until his fellow Kohenim would be startled, and then stagger backwards from the force and then the beauty of his singing. Or Marshall says a different explanation is, when you're singing, we know when you want to have your voice, when your voice carry, then you throw your head back. So like this, he's making his voice carry so well with this technique of his that the other Kohenim, or rather Levim, who were singing, would also have to throw their heads back in order to match the intensity of his voice. So again, he didn't want to teach anybody, and the Chachamim criticized him for that. There's someplace else, I think a Raisa or something that says that he also used, when they asked him why he doesn't want to teach it, that he said the same reason, because he doesn't want that it's going to fall into the hands of people who are going to use it for Avodah Zarah. Again, not necessarily did the Chachamim accept that reason. Next, what about the fourth one in our mission? We said Ben Kamtzer. So Tanan Rabbanan, Ben Kamtzer lo yirotzeh lelamed al ma'aseh ktzav. Ben Kamtzer did not want to teach people how the secret of writing. What did he do? Omru olav, they said about him, shayu notel dalad kulmasin ben etzvoisav. He would take four pens between his fingers. V'im hoise tevel shal dalad osius. So if there was a word of four letters that he had to write, hayakosav v'asachas, then he would write it all at once. And particularly, of course, as we said, he did that with Hashem's name. Omruloi, so they asked him, Mara Isa Shaloi Lamed, why don't you want to teach that secret to anybody else? And he didn't give an answer. So Kulan Motsu Chuvala Divrayim, in the end, all the other people mentioned in our Mishnah were able to find reason. They were all able to find an excuse why they didn't want to teach it. We said because Ben Gat based Gamu, because they didn't want that people are going to use the method of the Lachma Ponim for Avodah Zarah, based Avtinas with the Ktodas. Even Hugras maybe was able to find, because again, the same idea that maybe the idea is that again they could use that method when they sing in front of Avodah Zarah. Ben Kamtzer couldn't find any excuse. You're not going to say that they could do the same thing and honor Avodah Zarah with that, because nobody honors Avodah Zarah like that. Nobody makes a big deal that the name of an Avodah Zarah has to be written all at once, that there should be a gnai that if it's not written all at once, and that you shouldn't talk in the middle of it. Therefore, Ben Kamtzer can't get away with the excuse that I didn't want it to be used for Avodah Zarah. So, al-rishonim nema zeichot tzaddik v'bracha. So about the earlier ones, it says the memory of the tzaddik is for a bracha. Val ben kamtzer v'chaverov, about Ben Kamtzer, who didn't even have an excuse for what he did, and other people like him, it says v'shem nema, v'shem rishonim yirkav, it says the name of the rishonim should rot. So the Gemara asks, my v'shem rishonim yirkav, what does this expression rot mean? If you're talking zeichat tzaddik libracha, then the opposite should be klala. So it should be v'shem yishoyim yikulal or something like that. Why are you using the expression that the name should rot? Amar Rabbi Elazar, rak bivus tala b'shmoisan. It means that rottenness should come into their names. D'loy maskin and b'shmayu, we won't use their names. We don't ever name after yishoyim. So therefore, it's like as if the name rots away rusts away from not being used. You don't name after a rosh. The Marsha actually has a different explanation over here. He says the vote is we don't want the Rishoyim to stay Rishoyim. We know Yitamu Chatoyim V'loi Chotim. We want that the Averis should disappear, not the people who do them. So we want that the name Rosha on this person should disappear and become moldy. So the name of him as a Rosha will become moldy and will rot away and disappear because he'll become a tzaddik. But the fact is, you do have over here that you don't use the names of Rishoyim. Tosfos gets into a bit of discussion over here about certain places in Shas where it seems they did use names of Rishoyim from Tanakh, and Tosfos finds reasons. Maybe Tosfos brings different gersois to say that they're not exactly the same name. Tosfos Yishonim says, what about Yishmoel? We know we had, for example, Rabbi Shmuel. We have a couple of Chachamim named Rabbi Shmuel. One answer is Rishonim say that Yishmael did do tshuva, therefore we can name after him. Tosfos Yishonim gives a different reason. Yishmael's name was given by Hashem himself, therefore you're allowed to use it.
as opposed to the names of other Rishayim. The Pnei Yeshua has a whole different explanation. He says the problem with naming after Rishayim is really only primarily where the name itself indicates something negative. As the Gemara is going to give an example now involving the name Doeg, where the name of Doeg, the enemy of David, was named that. The Gemara says that Hashem was, so to speak, like Doeg. He's worried about him. This guy is going to end up becoming a Rasha. So a name like Doeg you're not supposed to use, but a name that in and of itself doesn't have a particularly bad connotation, the Pnei Yeshua says, even if it happens to have been the name of a Rasha, you might be allowed to use it, because look, there were probably many tzaddikim who had that name as well. One practical example we have is the name Menachem. There's only one person named Menachem in Tanakh. He was one of the later kings of Israel, and he was a terrible Rasha, and yet we use the name Menachem all the time nowadays. So one possibility is that fits with what the Pnei Yeshua is saying, because the name itself has a positive connotation. Okay. So the Gemara says, Mosiv Ravina. So Ravina says, I have a contradiction. What do you mean you're not allowed to name after Rishayim? A Braisa says, Maisa b'Doeg ben Yosef. It happened with Doeg, the son of Yosef. So he's named after Doeg, the enemy of David, who was a big Rasha. Sheinichai Aviv ben Kotan Lima. His father passed away, so he left him as a Yosim to his mother. Every day his mother would measure him with tefachim to see how much he had grown from one day to the next. And she would give the extra weight. She would figure out, based on that, how much extra he weighed, and she would give that amount of gold to the Beis Hamikdash. Eventually, when Yerushalayim was besieged, at the end of the first Beis Hamikdash, and the enemy is overpowered, and then the city, and then everybody in the city is starving, she shechted this kid, Doeg, and ate him. Yumiya mourns about her in Eicha. As the Pasuk says, how could it be that things got so bad that women are eating their children, children of Tipuchim, Tipuchim Meloshim Tfachim. So look at this. She loved this child so much that she measured every day to see how much more he weighs, and she was so rich that she was able to give that extra amount in gold every day to the Beis Hamikdash. And look what a horrible tragedy that she ended up eating him. And Meshiva Ruach HaKodesh Va'emeres, of the Ruach HaKodesh, answers with the second half of the Pasuk, Im Yehoreg B'mikdash Hashem Koyin V'Navi. How could it be that in the Beis Hamikdash, a Koyin and a Navi was killed, named Zechariah ben Yehoyada HaKoyin, who was killed when he told the people off for worshipping Avodah Zarah. So, and because of that is why this tragedy happened. So in other words, the point is that we see that the child was named Doeg, and that's named after a Rasha. Says, okay, Chazi Mai Solikbei. You know what? Look what happened to him in the end. Look at this tragedy that happened. That was a contributing factor. In other words, the fact that he was named for a Rasha ended up being a contributing factor in what happened to him. So that underscores what we're saying. You shouldn't name after a Rasha. And this guy, Yosef, did name his son after a Rasha. And look what happened to that child. So therefore, we don't do that. Talking about this pasuk, Zecha Tzadik Levracha, V'Shem Rishayim Yirkav, Rabbi Elazar says, here's another drasha we have from that pasuk. A tzadik is all by himself. When you mention the tzadik, all by himself, right away you think of the good things that he did. V'Rosha Mechaveiro, a rasha, you remember, even you mention a different rasha, then already you remember the one rasha as well. Tzadik me'atzmei d'chtiv zecher tzadik livracha, tzadik v'loshen yachid, so one tzadik all by himself, v'roshem mechaber, d'chtiv v'shem rishoim yirkav, the name of the rishoim in plural, it could have said v'shem rosha yirkav, instead it says v'shem rishoim, so that represents this idea that you mention one rosha, and automatically you think of other rishoim as well. There's a different explanation also that it means that a tzaddik is able to be a tzaddik on his own, like you have by Avraham Avinu, that he's able to be a tzaddik on his own, whereas a rasha tends to become a rasha by influence from other people. Okay. So tzaddik ma'atma, yeah. Amale Ravina lahu mir abbanan. Ravina one time said to one of the chachamim to have a mesader agadta kamei. This chacham used to arrange agadta, so he used to teach agadta in Ravina's yeshiva. So he asked him, Menaha milsa da amir abbanan zecha tzadik lebracha. Where is the source for what the chachamim say, zecha tzadik lebracha? Amale, so the ahu mir abbanan says, what do you mean, what's the source? Dichtiv, zecha tzadik lebracha. It's right there, dehoksiv, zecha tzadik lebracha. It says right there in the pasuk. So he says, midaraisim and nolod. Okay, but I want to know, where do you find a source for that in Chumash? We know that everything in, even in the rest of Tanakh, has a source in somewhere in Chamusha Chumash Torah. So where is a source in Chumash for this concept of Zecher Tzadik Livracha? So he says, Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says, Vashem Omer Hamachasani Ma'Avraham Asher Ani Oseh. Hashem says, when he's going to destroy Sodom, how can I conceal from Avraham what I'm going to do? Uchtiv, and the Pasuk then continues with a praise of Avraham. Va'Avraham Hoya Yiel Goy God of Atzim. Avraham is going to become a great and a numerous nation. So therefore, as soon as Hashem mentions Avraham, he right away mentions a bracha for him. So that, therefore, we learn the concept from that of Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Then Ravina asks the guy, Menoha Milsa de Omer Rabbanan Shem Rishoyim Yukov, where do we have a source for what it says, Shem Rishoyim Yukov, the name of the Rishoyim should rot. Omalei, and again, the guy says, what do you mean, Doctor? Shem Rishoyim Yukov. It says right there in the Pasuk. So he asks him, Midaraisim and Olan, okay, but where is a source for it in the Torah? Now, why does the guy doesn't understand it the second time around? He doesn't understand what Ravina is getting at? Maybe Ravina asked him both questions at the same time. Where is there a source in the Torah for where it says Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and where is there a source for what it says Shem Rishoyim Yukov? Anyway, so he asks him again, Midaraisim and Olan, where is a source for that in Chumash? So Dichtiv Vayel Ad Sdoim, earlier in that in Parashas Lech Lecha, it says that Lot camped with his tents until Sdoim, and right away, Dichtiv, and right away it tells us who was Sdoim, Va'anshei Sdoim, Roim Machatoim, La'Hashem Ma'od, the people of Sdoim were very wicked and sinful to Hashem. So we see as soon as Sdoim is mentioned, we right away mention something derogatory about them. More on this topic about tzaddikim and rishoyim. Omer Rabbi Elazar, tzaddik dor ben shnei rishoyim. You have an example of a tzaddik who lived among two rishoyim. V'loy lomad mimaseim, and he didn't learn from their bad ways. And rosha dor ben shnei tzaddikim v'loy lomad mimaseim. Vice versa, you have an example of a rosha who lived between two tzaddikim, and he didn't learn from their ways. This also connects with what we said. Zecher tzaddik livracha, that even when you have the tzaddik is all by himself, nevertheless, it still stays a tzaddik and his memory is for good. And Rishayim Rishoyim Yukav, even though there's Rishoyim among, there's Rishoyim that he's surrounded by, and their names rock, but nevertheless, he doesn't end up following them. So what's the example? Tzaddik, Dorben, Shnei Rishoyim, B'loi Lomen, Maseim, is Evadia. Evadia was Achav and Izebel's chief of staff. He's Asher Alaboyas, he's in charge of the palace. So he's living among them and he didn't learn from their ways. He remained a tzaddik. In fact, he's one of the Nevi'im. Dorben, Shnei Tzaddikim, B'loi Lomen, Rosha, Dorben, Shnei Tzaddikim, B'loi Lomen, Maseim. And who's a Rosha who lived among two tzaddikim and didn't learn from their ways? Ze Esav, as Esav lived together with Yitzchak and Rivka, and he didn't learn from them. In fact, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that is one reason why Avadia's Nevuah is specifically against Edom, which is descended from Esav, because Hashem said it's only appropriate that Avadia, who withstood the Rishoyim that he's living among, should go and say Nevuah about how Hashem is going to punish Esav, who withstood the two tzaddikim that he lived among and did not learn from their ways. Okay. More on this topic. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Mibirchosin shal tzaddikim at the lamed klala l'rishayim. From the bracha of tzaddikim, you can learn a klala for the rishayim. In other words, in the same place, Rashi says, in the same place where Hashem gives a bracha to the tzaddik, in the same place Hashem gives a curse to the rasha. And in the same place where Hashem curses the rishayim, you learn from there that Hashem also gives at the same time a bracha for the tzaddikim. Because the Pasuk says, Ki Yadativ, Hashem says about Avraham Avinu in connection with that thing about Sodom, after the Pasuk we quoted before of Avraham, Hashem continues, Ki Yadativ, because I know him and I favor him, because he teaches his descendants Tzedek u'Mishpat. And the next pasuk says, Hashem said the cry of Sodom and Amora is very great, and therefore I'm going to destroy them. So we see as soon as Hashem benches the tzaddik Abraham, right away there he also curses Sodom and says that he's going to destroy them. And vice versa, from the klala of Rishoyim, you learn a bracha for tzaddikim. The pasuk says, again, we have the pasuk that we quoted before, that the people of Sodom are evil and sinful, Lashem. And right away, Vashem Omer El Avram, Achri, Poret Loit Me'emoi, right away, then the pasuk continues, Hashem said to Avram, after Loit separated from him, that he's going to give him the whole Eretz Yisrael. So we see, as soon as Hashem cursed the Rishoyim of Sodom and called them Rishoyim and Chatoyim, right away he gives a bracha to Avram. Marsha explains differently. The vort is, what the Gemara is saying is, sometimes you have a bracha is given to the tzaddik, and it's not right away clear why he deserves that bracha. But since you have next day a klola of the Rishoyim, then you can derive from that why the tzaddik does the opposite and deserves a bracha. And vice versa, sometimes you have a klola for a rosha where it's not clear why he deserves it, but you see the pasuk mentions by contrast something that the tzaddik did, and you understand that the rosha did the other way around. So you have, for example, he says, so by Avraham in Parshas Vayera, the pasuk Ki Yedatev Lamana Sheyitzaveh says that he's going to teach his children Tzedek U'Mishpat, whereas Sodom was exactly the opposite. Now we have Sodom is going to be destroyed. The pasuk doesn't spell out here in Chumash why exactly what Avera Sodom did that made them deserve to be destroyed. Now we understand, because they did the opposite of Avraham, they did the opposite of Tzedek U'Mishpat. And vice versa, when we say that Hashem gave Avraham a bracha that he's going to inherit the whole Eretz Yisrael, why? Because he was unlike the people of Sodom. They were Roim v'Chatoim, whereas Avraham, now we understand, was exactly the opposite, and therefore he deserved a bracha. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Elazar, afilu b'shvil tzaddik echad olam nivra. The world is created even for the sake of one tzaddik. Shenema, v'yar alekim esa'ur ki toiv. Hashem saw the light that it's good. The ain toiv el a tzaddik, and the word toiv refers to a tzaddik. Shenema imru tzaddik ki toiv, as the pasuk says, say to the tzaddik that he is good. So therefore, in other words, the pasuk is saying that Hashem saw that it's worth creating the light and the whole rest of the world just for the sake of the toiv. Marsha explains the point is because by every other day of Ma'aseh Bereishis, it just says in general by Yara Lekim Ki Toiv that Hashem saw everything that He had done on that day and it's good. So why on the first day that has to specify Davka that Hashem saw the light that it's good? So therefore, that gives us the drasha that it means that Hashem saw that the light deserves to be there for the sake of the tzaddik. Amar Rabbi Elazar says another statement. Kolam Shakeach Dova Mitalmudai. If a person forgets even one thing of his Talmud, of his learning, Gurdim Golos the Bonav, he causes Golos for his descendants. Shenema, the pasuk says, Vatishkach Torah Salekecha, you forgot the Torah of Hashem, Eshkach Bonecha Gam Oni, therefore Hashem says, I will forget your children, meaning they're going to go into Golos. Rabbi Bohu says a different thing, besides that he sent him Golos, he's also demoted from his high position. Shenema, because the first half of that pasuk says, Ki ata hadas mo'asta, you've rejected das, you've rejected knowledge of Torah, v'em oscha mikahin li, so I have rejected you from being a kohen in my honor. So we see that he loses his high position. Now, in Pirkei Avos, we say, Kol ha-shecheach dover echad m'mishnosei, that if a person forgets one thing of his Mishnah, ma'al ol ha-kosef kilim eschai b'nafshid, and the pasuk considers it as though he's guilty of endangering his own life. So what's the difference between that and what we're saying in the Gemara over here? Marsha explained, there we're talking about Mishnasai, the Mishnayas that he learned, that he learned the Kabbalah from his Rebbein. He were talking about Talmudah, he were talking about something that he himself was Mechadish in Torah with his own pupil. So therefore, it's a different thing. It's not Ma'alal HaKazuk, Kilim Eschai B'Nafshay, but he treats Torah casually, like it's not important. So therefore, so he doesn't bother having the menuchas hanefesh, the calmness to learn and remember his Torah. Therefore, Hashem sends his children into Golos, where also they don't have the calmness and the ability to be able to learn Torah, to be able to learn Torah well. So therefore, it's midah k'neged midah. Amar Rav Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rav Yechanan, more about tzaddikim. Ein tzaddik niftam in ha'olam ad shenivra tzaddik kemoisei. One tzaddik does not pass away from the world before another tzaddik is created of like him, of his caliber. Shenema v'zorach Hashemesh, v'vo Hashemesh. As the pasuk says, the sun rises and the sun sets. The point is, we know in Torah the night comes before the day, v'yi'erev v'yiboker. So why over here is the pasuk mentioning the rising of the sun before the setting? So it means that one sun of a tzaddik rises before the other one sets. For example, ad shalei kavsa shimshah shel Eli, before Eli's sun set, zorcha shimshah shel Shmuel HaRamasi, Shmuel HaNavi's son already rose and he was already having nevuah and leading the Jewish people even before Eli passed away. More on this topic of tzaddikim. Amar Rav Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rav Yechanan. Ra'a kodesh baruch hu shetzaddikim mu'adim. Hashem saw that tzaddikim are relatively few.
Omad Vashat, and therefore, if they're all in one generation, what are the other generations going to do? Therefore, Omad Vashaslan, the Chodor Vader, therefore Hashem planted them in every generation. You have on the second page of Tanya, near the end of Perek Aleph, the Alter Rebbe uses this as a proof that the Velt always understands a tzaddik to be somebody who has more mitzvahs than Averis, but you can't say that because all Gemara over here obviously shows that not. If that's the case, there aren't so few. Most Jews are like that. So rather, it means a tzaddik, like the way the Tanya talks about a tzaddik, somebody who was able to completely defeat and get rid of his Yetzirah, such people are very few. Obviously, a person has to have Bechira Chavshis, but the point is, people who are created with that ability are very few. So therefore, Hashem scattered them throughout the generations. Shenemah, Kila Hashem Mitzukei Eretz, as the Pasuk says, to Hashem belong the foundations of the world, by Yosha Salam Table, and he set the world upon them, meaning the tzaddikim are the foundation of the world, and therefore Hashem made that in every generation there are going to be some tzaddikim. Amar Abchiba Abraham Ibechan, and Afilu Bishvil Tzaddik Echad, or Elam Eskayim. In fact, the world can continue to exist even for the sake of one tzaddik. Before we said the world is created for one tzaddik. Now we're saying even to continue to exist, the world can continue to exist just because of one tzaddik. Shenemah, but tzaddik is sod olam. As the pasuk says, the tzaddik is the foundation of the world. Rav Chiya Didei, Amar Rav Chiya himself says, not like Rav Yochanan, that we learn from the tzaddik is sod olam, but rather he says, mehocha, you have a different pasuk, raglei chassid of Yishmer. The feet of his chassidim he guards. Now the word raglei, one meaning of raglei, can mean because of. Rashi brings, for example, vayivarach Hashem oischal raglei. Lavan says to Yaakov, Hashem blessed me because Hashem. Yaakov says to Lavan, Hashem blessed you raglei because of me. So the word raglei can mean because of the chassidim Yishmer, he preserves the whole world. The Gemara says chassidov tuvamash. What do you mean? The word chassidov means his chassidim in plural. So that would mean you need at least two chassidim. The answer is Amar of Nachmetz chassidoyksi. The answer is you have a kriyuksiv in the pasuk over there. It says chassidoy without the second yud. So therefore we can doubt. So therefore the kri, the ksiv rather is chassidoy, his one chassid. The kri is chassidov. And the Gemara says another thing that we learn from that pasuk. Amar of Chiba Abba Amar Bechnan. Once most of a person's life has passed and he has not done Averis, shuv enechoyte. He's not going to do Averis in the future. As again, it says, the feet of his chassidim, he guards, the feet is also the end of the body. So it means, in other words, therefore, it's to the end of a person's life, Hashem guards. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean he doesn't lose his Bechira Chavshis. You have, Tosfos Hashanim points out, you have the example of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, who was Kohen Gadol for 80 years and then became a Tzaddiki. But that means a person has Bechira Chavshis. If he wants to become Tavei, he'll have the capability. But it means that Hashem gives him extra help, that it'll be much easier for him to remain Kaddish V'tahar once he lived most of his life as a Tzaddik. Dvei Rav Shila Amri, they said in the Yeshiva of Rav Shila a little differently, once a person has been faced with a certain kind of Aveda, once and twice, and he doesn't do that Aveda, then he's not going to do that Aveda again. In other words, not that he doesn't have Bechira Chavshis, but he's much less likely to. Another thing we're learning from this pasuk, raglei chassid of Yishmer, where the word raglei also means to be accustomed to, like you have kihikisani zesh sholosh regalim. So once a person has been accustomed several times to not doing a certain Aveda, then Hashem gives him extra help that in the future he won't succumb to that kind of Aveda either. Okay.